We will talk to Mark throughout the hour, but first we'll let his music do the talking. Here is Mark Dignam.
Yeah, for the day that's in it, I'm going to start off with probably one of my oldest songs, and it's called Manhattan Skyline. Manhattan skyline, angled off into the night. Manhattan skyline, angled off into the night. And I remember bridges all covered in mist, and I remember our fingers entwined, and I'm meeting up minds in whisper. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're too ethnically disadvantaged, pounding hearts, trying not to get ripped apart in the land of the free, in the land of opportunity. Still add up to minuses. That's what the man wants to see. That's what the man wants to see. That's what the man wants to see. Yeah. I'm lost, I said, though I knew she was sleeping. I'm empty and I'm aching, and I don't know why. Counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, we're all come to look for a man.
Mark Dignam, the imagery of the two pockets adding up to a negative number is
right.
What a great, well, it's not great, but what a great image symbolically of what our physical goals seem to be
right.
Sometimes. Let's have people in debt. Tell me about that song. When did you write that?
That was written after literally my very first time here in the U.S., which was back in 91. I came over as a pasty white Irish boy looking up at skyscrapers going, wow, look at this. You know, a lot of my early experiences of being here in the States were all based around New York. So I've got a lot of lifelong friends up there. And so it was basically this idea of, you know, I'm thinking about immigration stuff and visas and things like that. And I was like, what would happen if somebody fell in love in New York and had to get back on a plane then the next day and you know, just because of a piece of paper?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what would that feel like? What would that flight out of JFK feel like on the way over the Atlantic? So that's basically the idea.
When did you start playing and under what circumstances?
Under what circumstances? I think I picked up a guitar when I was probably about 17. And I met a guy called Glenn Hansard, and we went busking in the middle of Dublin, literally just went out and started playing on the streets, did that for a handful of years, gathered up a whole troupe of people. It was basically our little Woodstock every Saturday afternoon on Grafton Street in Dublin. And we progressed up then into all the singer-songwriter nights that were going on around Dublin. It was a really heady scene. Like, literally, you'd be doing these little acoustic gigs and John Prine would walk in.
Wow.
And Sinead O'Connor would turn up and things like that. And because they heard about these little gigs and they would all come. So you'd be like, one night you're sitting there just with your buddies. The next minute, like, Paul McGuinness, the manager from U2, is sitting next to you. And you're just like, it was heady stuff. It really was. And we all, like, moved up into, you know, doing our own gigs around Dublin. Whelan's was a particular stomping ground. The Bagot Inn, I don't know if you've ever heard, the Bagot Inn was a legendary club where, you know, a lot of the big stars, a tiny little room, it was about the size of Club Cafe, but all these, like, big stars would come and play it because I just got this cool
reputation. No, I didn't know.
Reputation. Yeah, it's
I know
legendary.
Grafton Street.
Grafton Street, good old Grafton Street. But so, you know, so we're gigging and gigging and gigging and just climbing the ladder. And, you know, here we are. Here we all are today.
Was your aspiration to be a professional musician as a teen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, the very first concert I ever went to see was Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy after he had split up the band. And he had this band called Grand Slam, played in a hall called the SFX Hall. And I looked at that guy up there on the stage. I was like, oh, my God, look at that. Look at the presence. Look at the power of that guy. I want to be that guy, you know. And ever since then, you know, I've just, it's my favorite place to be is, you know, behind a microphone singing and interacting with audiences.
If you're just joining us, Mark Dignam is here. We're going to talk a bit about his song Angels of Mercy in a bit and the story behind it, which is simply incredible. This is the most trite question ever, but for a musician who thrives so much on connections with an audience and on what it means to be in concert, as in concert with other human beings, the last 20 months or so has to have been really difficult.
Talk about roller coaster ride. It's been like literally existentialist crisis, I suppose, in the middle of it all. You know, just kind of going, you know, if I don't do this, what do I do? Who am I?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm not out playing. And I actually went through a long period of time when I started feeling like, well, maybe I'm done. You know, maybe I've aged out of this already and it's time to hang up my hat. And then I don't know what shifted it for me? I think probably the death of my mother kind of shifted it again. And I kind of started thinking, now I've got more to say. You know, it's hard to shut me up sometimes. And I was like, okay, I've, you know, where's that guitar? And let me see what I can do with this.
Well, it is interesting what you're saying. And as somebody who's also been at his craft for a while, even though we kept going during the pandemic because radio was able to do that for the most part as a so-called essential industry. But it you do start to wonder, maybe this slowing down and retirement, maybe, or not even calling it retirement, but this shift. I have to say it wasn't as unattractive as I thought it might have been at first. But then after a while, you begin to crave more of it. It's just very interesting.
I think when you do something for a long time, it feels like a marriage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it feels like something that, you know, you've got this, you know, you can imagine it as another person, this other thing in your life that you're intimately familiar with. And then suddenly you take that presence away. And there's a lot of grief. I mean, I had grief on so many different levels over this whole thing. Between, you know, my mother dying has made my connection to Ireland a little bit more tenuous. You know, what's going on with my career, you know, and the loss of my mother as well. So it's like, it really is like anything you do for a long time, you become married to, and the loss of it is a grief event, I feel.
One of the things I worry, I don't worry about a lot of things, but I think about this a lot, which is we're, as a country, having trouble getting our arms around public health issues when it comes simply to fighting the coronavirus, but there are going to be public health issues regarding post-traumatic stress disorder, regarding the grief that you're talking about, regarding
generational trauma,
regarding the loss of opportunities and experiences. There are going to be a lot of mental health issues, even more so as we work, you know, we do a lot of work with kids, and there are some folks who are working very, very hard to provide good experiences for kids during a very difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
Others, not as much. And something people are tired of hearing me say it, maybe, but I'll say, you gotta understand, you have years to be an adult, but you only get one chance to be 13.
Absolutely.
One chance to be 14. You can't just press pause on that. You need to try to keep up, and it's something.
And it's such a time where the experiences are really, you know, layered onto your psyche at that age. You know, it's they talk about vulnerability, but it's also impressionability.
Yes,
you know, this is the huge life event for my kids or any of the other kids around. And I think when this all started, we didn't realize that it was going to be, you know, we thought it was like a flood in the basement. Let's go down and mop up, clean up, throw a bit of bleach on it, and then get back to the living room.
Just another day, just another month, year before. How are your kids? They're coping okay?
My kids have been great. You know, it's funny, they have weathered this a lot better than I expected. I was really expecting a lot of like kind of meltdowns and things like that, and it really didn't happen. But, you know, I'm aware of the fact that they will internalize this time, and it will be a part of their, you know, they'll, as I always say to them, you'll talk about this time for the rest of your life. You know, you will start, and you'll talk to your kids about it, and you'll talk to your grandchildren about it. You know, it's the 9/11 for them. It's the Pearl Harbor. It's the, you know, those huge events. You know, so I think it'll be a few years yet before they come back to me and then start talking about like, Jesus, what was that like for you? Mm-hmm. And then I'll bore them with what it was like for me.
This is Mark Dignam, who you're listening to. We've linked to his website. You can also find him on Bandcamp. Why don't we have you play another song, and then after it, let's talk a little bit about your mom and the single. I really would like to compare notes with you about the loss of your mom. What song would you like to play next?
That is a good question. It's a very good question. Oh. I like that as a question.
You're giving me a moment.
Let me see if I can answer it.
Because
this is another one that will go on the upcoming album, and it's a very Dublin song. It's actually written for. There was a play that came through town called The Night Alive by Conor McPherson. It's an Irish play, and City Theatre were doing it and asked me would I write a song for the promotional material. So I got to take somebody else's story and write a song for it, which is the kind of work I'd like to get more of, you know, a little less strenuous for me. So, all right, it's called The Night Alive. Of storm, she brought more clouds to calm. In through the windowsill, his love for her knows no bounds. She wore stars like a crown. Oh, his love for her, his love for her knows no bounds, knows no bounds. No bounds, knows no bounds. The kettle was on, the lads were singing songs, dancing in the moonlight, hard doing old Dublin proud. His love for her knows no bounds. In his eyes she wore stars like a crown. Oh, his love for her, his love. Knows no bounds, knows no bounds, knows no bounds, knows no bounds. The night was a lie with redemption's song. He said, Amy, I believe, oh, we can turn this sinking ship around. His love for her knows no bounds. In his eyes she wore stars like a crown. His love for her, his love for her.
knows no bounds. Knows no bounds. Knows no bounds. Knows no
Mark Dignam, what a beautiful, beautiful song. And the ending there, the escape from the boundaries or the
I get continue. Well out of bounds in that, I do.
Yeah, no, it's really a beautiful song.
Thank you.
And, you know, a love knowing no bounds makes me think about the incredible story of your mom. My sympathy. Your mom passed away fairly recently, right?
Yeah, back last, in the middle of the whole pandemic, you know, when the lockdown kind of began. So she went in that May, right after the lockdown.
So you've heard a lot of heartbreaking stories about distances, grandparents not being able to see grandchildren or great-grandparents not being able to see their kids. But here's a case, even absent the pandemic, you're oceans apart. Your mom is in Ireland. You're here in the U.S. Add the pandemic and the inability to travel under the best of circumstances. Well, what if it occurs under such circumstances that it's unlikely you'll have a chance to touch, hug, hold the hand of, or be in the same air as your mom? And forgive me for being so direct, but you experienced that. And I just can't imagine what that was like. How old was your mom?
She was about 77, and she had been in decline for a while. She had dementia and cancer at the same time, and it was kind of a race to see which one was going to get her in the end, you know. But I think the lockdown kind of sped things up for her, you know. She had no visitors then for a while, and that I could see the dip, you know, fairly precipitously.
Tell me about her in terms of the relationship you had with her and some of the things that perhaps give you joy or...
Well, I think like most most families, it was complicated.
Yeah.
You know, she had a lot of... She brought us up on her own. She brought four of us up on her own. And being a parent myself now, I know exactly what that means. You know, and... You know, she would always say that she didn't do a great job, but I'm like, my God, she was there for everything. You know, we never wanted. There was never time when there wasn't food on the table or clothes on our back and all that. So, you know, I bow down to her for all of that. She was funny. She had a great sense of humor. She loved to laugh. She loved music. She loved to sing. And, you know, in some ways, she was a simple country girl from the middle of Ireland. And at the same time, you know, she would just completely light up a room. Everybody around her just loved her. She was adored. But she had a hard time. Life was hard for her. And, you know, that showed. And, you know, an interesting aspect of the whole thing is, for me on this side, is, you know, the immigrant experience itself is kind of unique. You guys who are all born and raised here will never understand what it means to be an immigrant in another country. And the thing is, I think as an immigrant, you kind of have that picture of, you know, one day I'm going to get that call. I'm going to get that phone call. And I'm
interesting.
Gonna, yeah. And I'm going to have to do this heartbreaking trip, you know. And I had this whole picture of how it was all going to go down, you know, that I was going to be a wreck in the airports, and how was I going to get through these long flights, you know, knowing where I was going. And it was, you know, I literally had the whole picture planned out in my head, you know, being here, over here. And then for it to happen the way it happened, it was, you know, I don't know whether I was robbed or saved from that experience. You know, suddenly I didn't get to fulfill that whole picture, and I had to literally watch the whole thing go down on a screen. You know, thankfully, you know, we have the technology to do that. But it was surreal, even just from that point of view, of not being in the room, not being 3,500 miles away.
Interesting, because the a creative mind like yours can fantasize about just about any way that could go down or happen. And I mean, when you first came to the U.S., and it never would occur to me that you'd think about things like that initially.
Yeah.
And who could have ever thought that the moment would happen as it did?
Yeah.
The song you wrote called Angels of Mercy, I know, was inspired, I think, by one person, but he is certainly not alone in terms of the support he provided. Mm-hmm. So I guess, can you tell a little bit about how you connected with your mom? Because this is an incredible story.
Well, it was like, as everything was unfolding, you know, and it looked less and less likely that I was going to be able to get on a plane and go over. You know, as I said, my brother set up a screen in the room of the nursing home she was in. And it was hard stuff watching the decline. But at one moment, a male nurse, an immigrant himself, probably from a South American country, I think, he came into the scene, and he just took such great care of my mother in that moment. And I was really touched by it. And as the weeks went on, I started thinking, like, here's this mayhem going on all around the world. People are in fear of dying. And this guy's gone to work. He's gone into work and he's caring for my mother, you know, probably leaving his own family behind to go care for my. And I was very touched by that moment. And it really stuck with me throughout the whole thing. And I loved the whole thing of, you know, the displays in New York and things like that, people clapping from the balconies for the essential workers. But I still ended up feeling like, I don't know that they're really getting their due. You know, it's like, you know, after World War II, we had the GI Bill and things like that. I'm like, you know, hopefully there's an LPN bill or an RN bill after wipes out their student debt or something like that. But it's like, you know, they literally fought a war for us. You know, they literally went and fought a foreign enemy that came in and, you know, put their lives on the line. And I was like, I wanted to mark that in some way. I wanted to say, at the very least, you know, me, little singer-songwriter Marky Dignam, I see you, you know, and here's my contribution. And I hope that you get your due and the rest that you deserve.
Let's take a listen to the song. It's called Angels of Mercy, and think about that man in Ireland, as Mark's mom was in her final days, and how he helped not only care for her, but care for Mark and the entire family by connecting the two.
You went to work anyway, you had no choice. You're from the neighborhood that's never had a voice. You've always been cannon fodder on the front line. You've seen yourself in history books. Hope for change this time. Tide starts to rise. There's
There's sirens in the streets, they're clapping from the balconies. You're aching on your feet. Joe died on Saturday, Henrietta went last week. The ships are all stuck out at sea, praying for the heat. Schools have all shut down, kids don't get to meet. You feel like an old backyard shed crumbling to its knees. Sam's in tears at the window, can't hold Jane in his arms. His shoulders shake in torment, his heart screams an alarm. Sleep tonight, please sleep tonight. Our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy. Sing with me, sing with me, sing with me. Our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy. You know, they rattle your cage like they've always done. Today the world's upside down, for you it's just another one. Tide starts to rise, there's sirens in the streets, they're clapping from the balconies, you're aching on your feet. Joe died on Saturday, Henrietta went last week. Ships are all stuck out at sea, praying for the heat. Schools have all shut down, kids don't get to meet. You feel like an old backyard shed crumbling to its knees. Sam's in tears at the window, can't hold Jane in his arms. His shoulders shake in torment, his heart screams an alarm. Sleep tonight, please sleep tonight. Our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy. Well, sing with me, sing with me. Our angels of mercy, our angels of mercy, our
there, you have Angels of Mercy. That's the recorded track, and it's available on Bandcamp. It's getting a lot of play worldwide right now. And Mark and I were just talking about his kids and whether they had much of a relationship with his mom, and also, again, about the immigrant experience. And you were saying once you move, I guess you end up, it jeopardizes those connections, I guess.
Yeah, and you don't realize it. I think that that's part of the experience is, you know, it's all fun and games in the first couple of years. And you're kind of like, you know, as I said, looking up at skyscrapers and going, wow, isn't this cool? And you don't realize that your connection to where you've been becomes more tenuous the more years you spend in another place. So it's an odd experience. It really is, you know, and I think only any other immigrants that are listening, they're nodding their heads right now, you know, but
yeah, it has to be totally unpredictable. You just don't know. Matt, what brought you to the States?
Music, would you believe?
Yeah. Ireland, there's just no music there.
Well, I was working with a record company out of Dublin, and we had set up shop in Connecticut originally. We had a big house. It was kind of like a bit like a frat house, actually. there was a couple of bands from Northern Ireland and a couple of all of us piled into this big house in Connecticut, you know, which was, you know, equidistant between New York and Boston.
And was this a label?
A label, yeah. So my first couple of records were put out on this label, and the plan was that we would work the big Irish centers of the East Coast. And so that was what brought me over first. And then Carl Mullen, who you probably know, invited me to come down to Pittsburgh and hang out. And I was doing shows down here and met a girl, whirlwind romance, got married, had the kids, you know. So, you know, I grew up out of bed one morning and was like, oh, look, I live in Pittsburgh now. Isn't that strange?
Yeah.
So just to go back to the track itself, I also want to emphasize that out of whatever we earn from this song, we're going to give 50% of it to an international nurses organization. That's something I really want to do, to be able to say, you know, again, you know, not necessarily just to the hospitals, but to an organization that's for the nurses themselves, that supports them.
So that's a beautiful thing. And I know so many nurses, for mostly women, some men as well, the work is so hard. Mm-hmm. It's just so hard. And it's hard emotionally and mentally, but physically just brutal.
Yeah.
The things you need to do. Mark Dignam is who is with us. If I'm not careful, we probably do have time only for one more song. Wow, this has really flown by.
Cool. Yeah, I have to say it's a very enjoyable show to do. I really appreciate being here again.
You've got me thinking of a lot of different things. Are you going to be playing out anywhere soon?
I'm not 100% sure yet. There's lots of ifs and maybes going on at the moment, and keep watching the news reports to see what. So I'm not going to really talk about anything yet until that.
Okay. Well, look for Mark, you know, on Facebook, Bandcamp, his own website. He's good at letting you know where he's going to be. And I encourage you to support him and his art. What would you like to play now?
I'm going to finish up on a song that has become my kind of closing number for a lot of the shows I've been doing lately. And I think it's a good, balance to all the harder stuff that I've been singing about, particularly today. And it's just to give people the idea that even though it's a really hard time, it's a really hard thing that we're all going through, there is sunshine at the end of it. You know, there is light at the end of the tunnel, and it's all going to be okay eventually. You know, so it's a song called Along the Road. Good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. Good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. You took the film and cut the end. Didn't like how it was written. Now the new frames that you put in all have flowers in them. Whoa, good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. Good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. You plunged your oar into the sea and set your life a-sailing. And now all the grief and tears you've had, they're back there and they're trailing. Whoa, good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. Good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. You pushed your plow into the ground and turned the soil to the warming sun. Now all the seeds you've planted there are rising one by one. Whoa, good things, they are coming along the road, along the road. Good things they are coming along the road, along the road. Whoa, good things they are coming along the road, along the road. Good things they are coming along the road, along the road.
Mark Dignam, thank you
for
being with us.